Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampas from Australia. Coming up, we have a chat with Ian Pond, the fast bowling guru, and we also answer your questions. Well, I've been watching a lot of cricket on TV, being really satisfied because there's nothing much we can do in the winter in Australia. We can still go to the nets, but watching cricket on TV really brings that spark back to our life. How's your week been, David? Play any cricket over the weekend?
No, unfortunately not. It's been raining here, as you've probably been watching from down under.
Yes.
There's been a lot of rain around, and there's luckily the World 2020 hasn't been that badly affected so far.
Yeah.
But yeah. There's been definitely some rain-affected games going on. So, and that is what happened to us on Saturday. It started raining about 8:30 on Saturday morning, and it stopped raining, as far as I know, about 7:00 on Sunday morning. So, pretty much rained.
Not too happy about that?
Well, obviously not, because you want to play, don't you? But at least it was one of those games which was abandoned straight away. You didn't have to worry about it. You know, it wasn't one of those where it was showers and you go down to the ground and your covers are coming on and off and, you know, you're hanging around and you're waiting and you're hoping and generally getting more and more frustrated as the day goes on, and you end up going home about 4:30, you know, eventually the game being called off. Yeah. And then you think, well, you know, that was a waste of a few hours.
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
What I always say is, if it's going to be called off, I would rather it just starts raining first thing in the morning and doesn't stop until it gets called off before anyone even considers playing at all. So, you know, I did get to the point where it stopped raining. I think it stopped raining for about an hour towards lunchtime. Mm. And I got all excited and packed my cricket bag. and it remains still packed up, ready to go, with all my whites and everything in there. So, so I'll probably just leave that all packed up for next week.
Yeah. Did you manage to get into the gym or anything while it was raining?
Yeah, normally I go to the gym if it rains, but I didn't get a chance on Saturday because we went and did something else instead. So that's all right. You know, it's an extra session anyway, so it doesn't matter if you don't go. So yeah, I didn't really do anything cricket wise at all over the weekend. Apart from I did get to watch quite a lot of the World 2020, and I got to watch England get beaten on Friday, which is always good fun watching them getting beaten by a team of part timers from Holland, where most people don't even know what cricket is really. So you know that's not great. But you've been watching it as well, have you? You've been staying up through the night, I presume, have you?
Yeah. It's been pretty good. And I can tell you, the Aussies were celebrating hard when the English lost. And they're celebrating until we lost as well. But it was good fun watching that. And I did notice a couple of interesting things.
Yeah.
I don't know if you managed to catch Michael Hussey before he went into bat. He had a couple of bats in his hand and he was swinging hard with them.
Yeah.
The commentators were saying that he was trying to get that heavy bat feeling into his hand, so when he went into the middle with one bat, it'll feel lighter and his bat swing would be quicker.
Yeah.
In a science perspective, David, is that really correct? Like, if I had to go into bat and I need to hit out big, would I be able to carry a couple of bats and swing with them to get better bat speed?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because they do that in baseball as well. You see them putting a donut shaped weight on the end of the baseball bat to make it heavier to do exactly that for the big hitters. So it's called a tradition, but if you look at the sort of the scientific literature around it, there isn't really a lot of research into it, but what research has been done kind of says doesn't really make a lot of difference. And also the other thing you've got to worry about, if you're doing it all the time, then you can affect your technique, because it's like batting with too heavy a bat. It's one of the things that coaches say to young players all the time: make sure you don't get too heavy a bat, because if you get too heavy a bat, that affects your technique. You know, you're lugging the bat instead of having a nice smooth swing.
Yeah.
So if you're holding two bats in your hand and intentionally making it way too heavy, then you've got that chance of affecting your technique. Maybe not in the short term. If you did it once or twice, it would make any difference. But in the long term, you've got that risk.
Yeah.
Now, what a lot of research says, coming from athletics, so for things like shot putters, javelin throwers, things like that, what they do is they have a slightly heavier object, so say a slightly heavier shot put than they would normally throw, and they have a slightly lighter shot put than they would normally throw. Similar to, we've talked about this before, don't you? You have the slightly heavier ball and the slightly lighter ball for trying to improve your bowling pace.
Yeah.
Similar to that. Yeah. So, in theory, it's never been proven, and I know Ian Pont has been looking at this in the field, but in theory, if you if you swing two bats around a bit and then swing a very light bat around a bit, then that will give you A, the extra strength, and B, the extra bat speed that you need if you're going in just to give it a long handle at the end of a match or in a 2020 game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's an interesting area, and I don't think it's ever been proven one way or the other. I don't think it would do any harm. I mean, someone like Mike Hussey, he's knows his technique inside out anyway, and if he does that before a 2020 game, it's certainly not going to harm him. But if you're a young player, you might want to avoid copying that, especially if you only ever play 2020 games and you decide to do that before every single 2020 game you're going to play, then maybe that's not the best idea if you're still learning your technique.
Yeah. Speaking about big hits, David, Chris Gayle on Sunday our time, he really demolished the Australians. And
whoa, did he? Yeah, I watched that.
He took 27 runs off an over of Brett Lee's over as well. That's just heartbreaking. Yeah.
And he was bowling at 90 miles an hour plus, wasn't he, as well, Brett Lee?
Yeah.
So that was amazing.
Yeah, it really got me wondering, when a fielding team is faced with a situation like that, where really you can do nothing to stop the batsman, is there anything you can do?
Well, you could put a man on top of the pavilion roof. That's probably the first thing you can do, just to go and collect the balls that he's been with. 105 metres, that's how far he hit the third, this one. And it was enormous. I was sitting watching it, because it was on Saturday, obviously raining where I was. And it was the biggest six I think I've ever seen. I've seen some big sixes that have gone out of the park, but that was enormous. And it just kept going. I mean, it only stopped because it hit a building. So, what do you do? I mean, if he's playing like that, there's not a lot you can do, really. I mean, the first thing is hope and pray that he makes a mistake. and the second thing is, really, just keep trying things until you find something that stops him. I mean, I know with Chris Gayle, he's not so good against sort of more medium, not military medium, but sort of fast medium type bowlers who... tuck him up a bit, so don't give him room to play his shots. So they bring the ball back into him a bit. If you can find a fast medium bowler who can bring the ball back into Chris Gayle, you've got a better chance. Although if he's in that mood, you probably haven't got any chance at all. I mean, if you're playing in a club game and someone comes in and starts smashing it around, then you've just got to keep trying things until you find what works. Work on hunches, put fielders in silly places, change the bowling, give people one over, especially in 20 overs, just give people one over and then try someone else and just keep trying different tactics until something comes off. He got out in the end eventually, didn't he? I mean, he hit one straight up in the air in the end. So,
To Brett Lee
exactly,
as well.
So it just goes to show, I think probably, although Lee got him out, I think probably even Brett Lee would say that Chris Gayle won that particular battle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the West Indies just cruised home after that, didn't they? But nevertheless, there's not much you can do apart from keep changing the bowling, keep changing the fielders, keep trying different delivery, slower balls, fuller balls, shorter balls, and just hope that he makes a mistake.
Yeah.
What would you do if you were bowling here to him?
Well, I've seen, especially to opening batsmen, the fielding captain opens with a spinner. And I know opening batsmen are usually used to having the pace come onto the bat and they're used to facing fast bowlers, but when a spinner comes on, they get unsettled. And Kumble used it in the final and got Gilchrist out that way because he was used to having the pace come onto the bat. Could that be a useful tactic as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they've been using it in domestic 2020 cricket over here in England as well. Lancashire, who have been doing very well, have been opening the bowling with someone who is basically a part-time leg spinner.
Yeah.
And he's done very well. I mean, he's gone about six and over. He only bowls one over. He goes for about six.
Yeah.
And he gets a wicket now and again. If you go for six off your first over, that's, you know, for a spinner, then you think, oh, I've done well there. So, yeah, it works.
Yeah.
Because openers are more used to the pace on the ball, as you say.
Yeah. It's really about trying new things, isn't it? Unsettling the batsman.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. I think it's time we move on to the questions, David.
Yeah, that's right. And before we move on to me answering the questions, we're lucky enough to be joined by Ian Pont on the line again. So, as you know, Ian's the fast bowling guru. So, if you want to know more about anything that Ian does, then head over to maverickscricket.com when you get a chance and have a look at Ian's different coaching options that he can give you. And if you are not in the UK and you want some coaching from Ian, then go to Pitch Vision Academy. That's pitchvision.com/academy. And you can purchase Ian's fast bowling course, which basically talks you through the same stuff as he gives you if you go on a coaching course with him. So Ian's joining me on the line now. Hi, Ian.
Hi.
This week we have a question from Ralph in Hampshire here in the UK. What would you recommend for someone who is bowling quickly but extremely inconsistently?
Ah, Ralph, good question. In my view, having worked with quite a lot of fast bowlers at all levels, actually not just international but juniors, I don't see many people who are fast and wild, as in very inconsistent. What I do see is bowlers who bowl fast but occasionally lose control of the ball. For example, they might just fall off their action a little bit and push the ball down the leg side, or they might hang on to the ball a bit too long in their eagerness to bowl fast and just bang it in the middle of the pitch. You know, that would be quite a natural thing. I don't know many fast bowlers who can run up really fast and be incredibly accurate all the time. What I would say is, if you are fast, and I would always encourage people listening to this, never to slow down. If you hear a coach say slow down, bowler line and length, shoot them immediately, because that isn't really a way forward for fast bowlers. I would always encourage people to try and bowl fast. What I would say is, if you get the ball in the right areas most of the time, if you then bowl a poor delivery, you're far more likely to get away with it if you're quick than if you're medium pace, because the batsman purely has less time to realize it's a bad ball and get onto it. So I would never encourage anybody to try and slow down, but I don't see many genuinely fast bowlers who are wild or incredibly inaccurate. So I would say the things you need to bowl fast, which is running up in a straight line, going through the crease in a straight line and following through in a straight line, they're the same things you need to be accurate as well. So there's no reason at all why you can't be fast and accurate. And if the question is kind of hinting towards, is it one thing or the other, the answer to that would be no. You can have accuracy and speed. I mean, he's called Dale Steyn at the moment. Yeah. Who, as we know, can bowl fast and accurately. Brett Lee's quick and is pretty accurate. You know, Shoaib Akhtar and his pomp is quick and pretty accurate. These aren't wild fast bowlers. I don't see many guys who just run up and hurl the ball. At club level, yes, you might have people who are inaccurate, but I would also suggest they're not probably bowling as fast as they can either, because what tends to happen is they get put off by coaches. So long answers to the question, but the shortened version is go out and bowl as fast as you can, try and hit a length as often as possible, and just enjoy the thrill of fast bowling.
Okay, thank you for your time, Ian. Welcome to the question section of the My Cricket Coach Show. Our first question, David, is from Alexander. And he says, having watched England's warm-up 2020 game against the West Indies, I noticed that Ian Morgan was very keen on playing that unique paddle sweep over fine leg. I believe that this shot can bring many runs for cricketers, and I was wondering if you could do a section one day on how to play that shot. Before I let you answer this, I must say that I don't think the paddle sweep is as much as it's hyped up to be. Because I think players see the paddle sweep and then they forget all the other orthodox shots. If you remember the World Cup 2020 final against Pakistan and India last year.
Yeah.
The Pakistani batsman, Misbah-ul Haq, he needed five runs off three balls or something to win it for Pakistan.
Mm.
And he saw a ball down leg side and he thought, I might paddle sweep this. And he paddle sweeped it straight to short front leg when he could have just leg glanced it for a double, single or a two or something. So I think it really confuses batsmen and takes away the orthodox shots. What do you reckon, David?
Yeah, I completely agree. Morgan's got a whole range of these different shots. And if you've seen him, there's clips on YouTube of him playing the reverse sweep. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen that. How does that work?
Yeah, well, he gets into position to play an orthodox, or I suppose, yeah, it is orthodox these days, play an orthodox reverse sweep. So he gets into that position, and then at the last second, instead of reverse sweeping it, he uses the edge of the bat to sort of knock it as if it was an orthodox sweep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason he does that, he's got very quick hands, he's got very good hand-eye coordination. He apparently used to be quite good at hurling when he was young, because he's Irish, and hurling is a bat and ball sport in Ireland. So apparently that's how he learned all these crazy shots, because he's got a few different shots that he plays that are similar to that. So, I do agree with you, actually, that all these new shots are all well and good. And they certainly work at the professional level, but I think that you need to have a really good technique to start with before you even start thinking about those shots. So, you know, if you're a young player, or even if you're not a young player, if you're playing club cricket and you're not convinced that your technique is absolutely watertight, then playing a reverse sweep, because you know, you see that the fielder is up instead of back on the boundary, it's probably quite a high risk thing to do. You won't have practiced it that much, if at all. And unless you've got very, very good hand-eye coordination, you're probably not going to get away with it. So, yeah, I mean, when we're talking about, even in 2020 games, when we're talking about shots like this, you're probably better off, especially if you're a young player or you're a club player, you're probably better off playing more orthodox shots in terms of play straight. You know, you can still hit sixes straight down the ground, you can still cut and pull the ball, you know, you can still use your feet to get down the ground to the spinners to hit them through the leg side without playing a sweep shot necessarily.
Yep.
Even an orthodox sweep, let alone a reverse sweep or a reverse sweep or a paddle sweep or any of those other new shots that are coming into the frame. So yeah, you have to pick your battles. And so I wouldn't, although the question was how do you play these shots, if someone came up to me in the nets, I mean, it's impossible to explain how to play it on a podcast anyway, but if someone came up to me in the nets, a young player came up to me in the nets and said, right, you know, I want to learn how to play a paddle sweep or a reverse sweep, I would say to him, well, A, I don't know how to teach it, because how do you teach something like that? I'm not really sure. And B, even if I did know how to teach it, I wouldn't teach it to you until I know for certain that you can play an absolutely brilliant on drive, both along the ground and in the air. And how many people, especially if you're 14, 15, 16 years old, can play that shot well? Not many. Not many. So I'd say get back in the net, son, and work on your on drive, and then we'll talk about reverse sweeps.
Yeah. So concentrate on the basics.
Yeah, exactly. Concentrate on the basics, because if you think about why the professionals are doing it, they're doing it to try and manipulate the field. They're doing it to try and put the ball in a place where the bowler doesn't expect the ball to be put. So you have to have extremely good technique, extremely good faith in your hand-eye coordination to be able to do those things. And if you're not a professional player, you probably haven't got those things yet. I mean, there'll always be exceptions. There'll always be the 14-year-old who has got every shot in the book. And then, you know, maybe you can look at someone like that to start playing those shots. But generally speaking,
yeah,
you know, don't worry about those things until, you know, you've got a professional contract.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Our next question is from Matt, and he says, I play for Dunchurch in Warwickshire. Did I say that right, David?
Warwickshire, that's right, yeah.
And he's trying to find out if there are any coaching clinics in his area, specifically bowling. And he asks for any help or advice. Now, I know there's a course by Ian Pont in Pitch Vision Academy, David, but do you know of any other courses around his area?
Well, not specifically, but it was an interesting question because we do get questions like this sometimes, and it's an interesting thing to talk about, even though I can't specifically answer his question.
Yeah.
The question was, as you read it out, there wasn't any extra detail in there, and it would have been nice. If you want advice, I mean, I've spoken about this before, if you want advice or even if you just want a question like that answered, say, is there a live coaching clinic in my area? Then it would help to know a bit more about what you want, you know, how much you want to pay, when you want to do it, what areas are you looking to improve? I mean, he said bowling, but he didn't really say specifically what about his bowling. Does he want to bowl faster? Does he want to be more accurate? Does he want to learn how to bowl on a waist swinger? You know, what is it that he wants? So I can't really point him in the direction, because I don't really know anything about him. I don't know how old he is. I don't know what experience he's got. So if you do want to find out these type of things, then I'm quite happy to help where I can. And I do have contacts around the country, around the UK and also in Australia, who would be glad for, you know, an extra person on their coaching course. But I do need a bit more information. So, feel free to email those type of questions in, but do give me a bit more information about that. So I'm going to leave you to your own devices there, because I don't know enough, and B, I don't know anybody in the particular area that he's in who can help him. However, if you can't find anyone, then what I suggest is, as you say, head over to Pitch Vision Academy. There's several courses there which could help him, depending on what he wants to work on. There's the mental training course if he's having trouble with the mental side of the game. There's the fast bowling course if he wants to bowl fast. And there's the fitness course if he wants to improve his fitness. And all those courses are priced well below what you would pay for a coaching clinic. You know, you could easily pay upwards of £100 for a day, a coaching clinic day. And once you've done that day, that's it. You never get access to that coach again unless you pay another £100 for another day. The advantage of Pitch Vision Academy is you get all that information forevermore. So, and in fact, not only do you get all the information forevermore, but if there's any gaps in the information, you've got a specific question, you can email the coach and ask them for their assistance. And they'll help you out over email.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, the online coaching is slightly better than the coaching clinics. Although, obviously, you miss the hands-on stuff. That's the obvious weakness. But other than that, you know, you've got lifetime access to the information, and you've got lifetime contact with the coach who gave you that information in the first place. And you can't get that from a live coaching clinic.
Yeah.
So that's another option for him.
Yeah,
but if he does want to go with the live option, that's fair enough. Email him with a bit more information and maybe I can pin it down to someone who can help you.
Cool. Our next question is from Harris Shah. Mm. And he has a problem, David. He's an opening batsman, and he says that the problem I have is that when I get my eye in, I start playing shots and I tend to defend the next ball. For example, if I've hit a boundary, automatically in my mind I feel tired and must defend the next ball no matter where it pitches. This is how I mostly get out. Is there any way I can improve this? David, I've watched international cricketers, and the commentators always talk about after a batsman hits a four or a six, they get a single or get a double to sort of calm the nerves down, so get to the other end of the pitch to calm the nerves down, sort of calm themselves down, so they don't, in the adrenaline, they don't play a stupid shot. What do you reckon Harris needs to do?
That's a really good piece of advice there. Score a one after you've scored a four, so you don't get carried away and start trying to blaze it all over the place. His problem is the opposite of that, though. He's not getting carried away when he hits a four and starts blazing it. He gets so afraid after he's hit a four, by the sounds of it, that he'll just do anything to stay in the next ball. So what he's done there is he's moved out of the moment. He's moved out of the next ball, and he's thinking negatively. So he's gone, oh, great, I've hit a four. Oh, I better stay in this ball because I've just hit a four. And he stops concentrating properly. He stops concentrating on the ball that is coming his way. And he starts thinking about the last ball and how he needs to defend the next ball.
Yeah.
So he's premeditating a shot. And you know what happens when you premeditate a shot most of the time anyway. You increase your chances of getting out.
Yeah.
So he says his mind gets tired, which is an interesting phrase. I think probably what he means there is that he switches off. He goes into automatic pilot. An automatic pilot says, no matter what happens, defend this ball. Don't play it on its merits.
Yeah.
Don't act on instinct. Just block it. And for some reason or another, that's getting him out. Now, we don't know how that's getting him out or why that's getting him out. So in terms of technique, that's probably an area we need to look at as well, but we can't because we don't know what's happening. But in terms of the mental side, we've spoken about this before, having a volume control on your concentration level. If you imagine, I know we've talked about this before, but we can go through it again quickly. If you imagine, as the bowler's just about to deliver the ball, the volume control is up at 10. You're fully focused on the ball. And nothing else, just thinking on watching the ball, playing the ball. Then once you've played the ball, no matter what happens, whether you play and miss, whether you hit it for four, whether you hit it for six, whether you edge it to slip and slip drops, no matter what happens, turn the concentration right down. Think about something else completely. Think about your favourite TV programme or what you're going to have for dinner or, you know, what a lovely view it is from the non-striker's end or, you know, whatever you like, just as long as it's not about cricket or what's just happened. Just switch your mind off completely. And then as the bowler starts to run in again, you gradually just turn the volume up a little bit more until he gets again to his delivery stride and you're back up to 10 again. If you think like that, you haven't got time to think about, am I going to get out? What's just happened in the last ball? What's happening in the next ball? Blah, blah, blah. Don't worry about that. Just play each ball on its merits. Because as I've said before, Jeff Boycott always says there is no game, there's only the next ball. So if you can do that, work on that up and down volume control and play one ball at a time, I think that's going to make a significant difference.
So you're saying, David, that he gets his mind gets tired because he's always concentrating on what the next ball is going to be, so forth?
Well, it's hard to say because it's an interesting turn of phrase. My mind gets tired. I think what he means is he's just thinking too much, basically. Instead of playing each ball on its merits, he starts thinking about it. And because he can't handle that, his mind goes into a must defend the next ball mode because he can't handle trying to think about the tactics and play the shot and do everything at once. So he just switches into into automatic pilot and then he gets himself out. So, it's difficult to say because we don't know all the details. But my instinct is that he's trying to think about it too much. And you should only really be thinking about it for a fraction of a second at a time.
Our next question is from Ben Barrick. A lot of you might know him. He's a regular on the site. And it was his birthday last week, David. So happy birthday, Ben. And his mum got him a thing, well, he says it's a thing called a rollerball or a power ball. It's called a power ball in Australia. I think it might be called Dynaflex or something.
No, I think it's called power ball here as well.
Okay, cool. It's a ball with a gyroscope in which you twirl around in your hand and it makes your wrists and forearms stronger, he says. And it also helps with your grip. And it has really helped for playing squash. But what specific areas of cricket would it help with, he asks David. Have you tried out this power ball, David?
I have. It's good fun, and you certainly feel something happening when you hold on to that ball, and it's gradually getting more and more difficult for you to hang on to the ball, and you can feel your forearms getting getting worked out there. Unfortunately, there isn't much of a crossover to cricket, and let me explain why that is. It all stems from grip strength, because when the sports scientists did tests, what they found out was that your grip strength is directly related to your upper body strength. So the stronger your grip, the stronger the rest of your upper body is. So what people took from that is, well, if I improve my grip strength, my upper body strength will improve. not quite right. That isn't quite right, because the two, although the two are related to each other, the one doesn't cause the other, if you see what I mean. It's, you know, it's just they're related to each other. So having a much stronger grip won't suddenly give you a powerful upper body. But that's how the Powerball it works. And then, or the theory behind the Powerball, I should say. And then when you can feel it working, when you can feel that pain that burning pain in your forearm when you use it, then you think, well, it must be working. It must be getting stronger forearms here. And you are getting stronger forearms.
Yeah.
But the type of strength that it's improving is that what's called isometric strength, i.e. your ability to hold a muscle in a fixed static position rather than move it through a range of motion, like, say, for example, a bicep curl. I mean, I know. Bicep curls are the enemy on this podcast, but just to compare, a bicep curl, you curl your hand up towards your shoulder, and you can feel the muscle working there. It's moving through a range of motion. Yeah. Whereas where you're holding the power ball, nothing's moving. You're just having to hold on to the power ball, and it's gradually getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
Now, isometric strength, although it's got some uses, postural uses particularly in cricket, it makes no difference to batting or bowling, because unless your grip is so weak that you can't hold a cricket bat for any period of time, then that's all isometric strength does, is allows you to hold your cricket bat or hold a cricket ball. But, you know, with bowling, you're trying to get rid of the ball as fast as you can. You don't really want to hold on to it, do you? You want to get it out of the hand as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So not really much use for bowling.
Yeah.
Slightly better for batting, but again, a very peripheral thing. As I've said previously, I'd much rather see people doing chin-ups and press-ups and things like that, actual body movements which are using the muscles in a similar way to what you would be doing on the cricket pitch. I'd much rather see that than someone holding onto a power ball. That said, it's a good toy. It's a bit of a gimmick. It's good fun to play with. If you want to, you know, if you want to challenge your friends and improve your forearm and grip strength at the same time, great, carry on with that. But don't expect suddenly to be smashing sixes all over the place on the cricket pitch because you've been using the power ball for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, because in Australia, Andrew Simons endorses the power ball. And on the packaging, it says that you'll be able to throw harder and you'll be able to do everything that Andrew Simons does. So I was a bit critical of that at the start, but yeah, now you've confirmed it.
I mean, that is quite an extraordinary claim to make, isn't it? Because, I mean, how many people can do what Andrew Simons does? Even other players in the Australian team can't do what Andrew Simons does. I mean, Ricky Ponting, he's a great batsman, but he couldn't do what Andrew Simons does, which is just regularly put the ball in the stand.
Yeah.
You know, even one of the finest batsmen of all time, Ricky Ponting, can't do what Simons does. I mean, Ricky Ponting does what he does much better than what Simon does, I'd say. But nevertheless, you know, so, you know, to imagine that a toy essentially is a toy is going to suddenly turn you into, you know, a beast who can just pop the ball over the boundary without really worrying too much about the fact that it's 90 yards away. Well, no, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Be nice if it did, though. I mean, if it did that, I'd have one in each hand all day.
You'd be superhuman by the end.
Yeah, you would be superhuman. Yeah, exactly.
If you guys got iPods or MP3 players, don't forget to plug it into iTunes and subscribe to the My Cricket Show podcast. And you can also subscribe to us and follow us on Twitter. And if you guys have any questions or feedback, please email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Kevin Sampath from Sydney, Australia, signing off.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.